Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We get to turn the page now and listen to Yahweh, that is God's one and only name, speak for himself. If you would like to join in this discussion, you can call us at 877-300-7645. Now, there is a reason that God speaks for himself, and that is because not only is he articulate, but those who claim to speak for him almost always don't. They not only corrupt what he has to say, they either choose to ignore it, misquote him, or remove everything he said from context so that they can twist it to serve their religious agenda. Speaking of those who do not speak for him, those who claim to do so, those in religion and politics, God says, after all, who of them was present in the council of Yahweh? And who of them has seen or heard my word? Who of them has paid attention to and heard and heeded my word of words? And who has received the news and understood it? This is an indictment that requires us to understand the context of Yah's testimony. He has been berating religious leaders, particularly those who claim to speak for him, those with an affinity for Jerusalem, which would include Christian religious leaders, Jewish religious leaders, and Islamic religious leaders, that they don't speak for him and they are misleading. And he says that they are misleading because they've never listened to him. He says that they don't pay attention to my word. Why? Well, with the Jewish religious leaders is because they prefer the Talmud. With the Islamic religious leaders is because they prefer the Quran. With the Christian religious leaders is because they prefer their New Testament replete with Paul's testimony. So they don't know Yah's word. Now, what's really amazing, particularly for the religion of Christianity, even for Islam, that claims that Esau was a Muslim prophet. Esau is actually Arabic for Esau, the one person God calls out by name, says that he hates. But modern interpreters will tell you, oh, he really means Jesus. Even though they claim that he was a Muslim prophet, the reality is they all despise the word of words, the manifestation of Yah's Torah testimony, who is Yahusha. They don't pay attention to his testimony either. You don't hear Christians writing sermons based upon the testimony of Yahusha from the Sermon on the Mount. You don't have Christians talk about Yahusha's sacrifice and celebration of Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits. By the way, it's just an interesting aside here. Unleavened bread is really matzah. It is bread without yeast. Yeast is a fungus. The fungus represents the sin that corrupts our souls. The most prevalent troublesome disease right now that is making the news is fungal meningitis. Funguses corrupt the body, and that's why God wants them removed. So God is saying here, they have not received my word. They didn't receive Yahusha. They claim to have created a religion based upon him, and yet they cite Paul, who doesn't quote him, but instead corrupts his word and purpose. And so God is saying that those who claim to speak for him don't listen to him, don't study his testimony, and did not receive the human manifestation of his word, nor do they understand what it represents. And yet this disparity between the qualifications of God and man when it comes to whom we should trust has not been sufficient to dissuade religious men from pretending to speak on behalf of God. There was but one man who spoke as if he were the mouth of God. That is the Messiah Yahusha, the Dabar Dabar, the word of words. You know, and it's also amazing that you can cite Yah's testimony to Ariosha's testimony to completely destroy the myth of Christianity, and it is completely lost on Christians. They don't listen to him. They don't care what God said. His testimony is meaningless to them. But be aware, God is aware, and he is not pleased with the arrogance and insolence of the religious. He said, "Behold, the storm of Yahuwah's displeasure and fury shall go forth, giving birth to a destructive force, a storm of destructive force," he says, "upon the source of the wickedness, swirling down as birth pangs upon them." So God is saying, you know, I'm aware of what they're doing, and I'm going to hold them accountable, and I'm going to be really displeased because of what they have done to corrupt so many and to kill so many. And so because they have destroyed the lives of my children, giving birth to this destructive force, it's only fair that I provide accountability. So behold, the storm of Yahuwah's displeasure and fury shall go forth, giving birth to a storm of destructive force upon the source of the wickedness, swirling down as birth pangs upon them. Yosha would speak of storms being birth pangs, telling us that his return was near. This, therefore, reminds us that the word of words, Yosha, predicted this occurring immediately before his return, equating storms, their destructive force, to birth pangs. And so he was therefore referencing this passage in Yirmeyahu when he referred to the megas seismos, which speaks of great earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, and tornadoes, serving as birth pangs, increasing in frequency and power before his ultimate return. This next passage is as important as any we have the opportunity to consider. Yahweh's anger will not return until he is actually done working, and until he takes his stand on behalf of, establishes, confirms, and validates the decisions and plans of his heart. In the last days, you will all come to see this realization by way of consideration, discernment, and understanding. Now, my friends, that is a treasure. Let's return to it, and then we'll analyze it word by word. Yahuwah's anger. God has a name. It is Yahuwah. He is angry, which is required for love to be present. If you are not angry at those who are hurting those you love, then your love is not genuine. So Yahweh's anger, his frustration and resentment, will not return. So God, when he has intervened a number of times to show his animosity towards the consequence of deception, of religion and politics. That's the nature of the flood. That's the nature of those that were killed when they began to practice and worship Baal, religion and worship Baal, immediately after the Exodus, chanting around a golden calf. There are times when God intervenes and wipes a group of religious people out so that there is the opportunity for his relationship to thrive and be conveyed. He did so with Sodom and Gomorrah, which has been referenced already in this testimony. He did so in a half a dozen cities in the Promised Land. But then God is saying, you know, I've done my bit. I have created the environment where it is possible for you to know about my covenant, where it is possible for you to know of my animosity for religion. And so he's saying that his wrath will not return until he is finished. When is he finished? He is finished when he returns. Yom Kippurim, leading to Sukkah and year 6000 Yah, which is sunset October 2nd, 2033 on our pagan calendars. So Yahweh's anger will not return until he is actually done working, until he has completed doing everything that needs to be done. This was written in the call infinitive construct, which affirms the reliability and genuineness of this promise, and also serves as a verbal noun, that Yahweh and his work are inseparable, literally one and the same, which is what Maaseyah means, the work of Yah. And until he takes his stand on behalf of, establishes, confirms, and validates that is his decisions and plans, the decisions and plans of his heart. What are the decisions and plans of his heart? What does God want? More than anything, he wants the covenant. He wants us to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, which require us to walk away from those beguiling us through human institutions, for us to rely on him instead of men. He wants us to walk to him along the very path that he himself has engaged in to provide the way for us to come home. He himself did the work on Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, and also on seven Sabbaths. And he will do the work of harvesting his children, his saved souls, on Teruah, just as he did all of the work necessary for us to walk into his light on Yom Kippurim, reconciling the relationship, so we can camp out with him. This also suggests that Yah's work really concludes with Yom Kippurim, and that Sukkah, the seventh called-out invitation to meet with him, is the result, because God's going to return angry. And he's going to return angry on Yom Kippurim, which means Yom Kippurim concludes his work on our behalf. Sukkah is not work. Sukkah is the celebration of our life together. The decision and plans of Yah's heart are conveyed in his covenant, and central to the covenant is walking to God along the path that he has provided, that he has worked to facilitate. He says, in the last days, people will come to this realization, just as we are now. We are living in the last days. We have come to this realization, and we have come to it in exactly the way that he predicted we would, through consideration, discernment, and understanding. Mana, through thoughtfully and rationally evaluating the insights he has provided. This is Yirmiyahu 23:20. So in this marvelous testimony from Yahweh, we learn that God is going to allow man, through his religious schemes, to corrupt his word and to fool the unwary right up to the last day. And then, and only then, is he going to respond. That's what God has said. This hurricane that has wreaked havoc on the northeastern American coast was not an act of God. God is not actively involved judging humankind because he is displeased with us. God said that he is not going to intervene until all of his work is done. His work is not all done. There are six steps to what he views as perfection. He has only taken four of them. The next two won't be fulfilled for some time. I can't tell you what year Teruah will be fulfilled, but most likely case is between 2023 and 2026, on the cusp of his return. But I can tell you that his work in terms of finally reconciling Yisrael and Yehuda back into the Bereth covenant will occur in year, on Yom Kippurim, in year 6000 Yah, which on our pagan calendars is as the sun sets in Jerusalem, 6:22 p.m. on October 2nd, 2033. His work is not yet done, and he is not going to enjoin his anger as a birth pang, as a storm of his displeasure, until his work is done. That means that God is not judging nations or individuals now, but he will. This is what he has promised. He is going to allow religious people to continue to corrupt his testimony, to take what he has said out of context, to void it, ignore it, twist it, and then he will hold them accountable. This destroys the notion that God is engaged protecting the reliability of Bible translations and that God is actively judging, even punishing, those he does not respect. While he will do both things, he is not doing either now. Both realizations are devastating blows to religion and to those who advocate to them. But more than debunking these pervasive religious myths, God has told all who are willing to listen to him that he is personally going to do all of the work required to validate and fulfill his plans and promises. Further, he is going to accomplish this by taking a personal stand on our behalf, one which will serve to establish us. Moreover, these acts and this result will be wholly consistent with his character and nature. That is why Masayah means the work of Yahweh. It is why the name God chose to fulfill this promise, Yahusha, means Yahweh saves. When you understand the full tapestry of God's purpose and plans and how he himself is enabling them, everything makes sense. God has a plan which is a reflection of his heartfelt desire and purpose, one which will be enacted by him personally on his schedule. And his timeline includes a period of time known as the last days, an era which will end the world as we know it. And if that were not enough for one verse, with these words we discover that in the last days, God's people will finally come to realize and understand his plan, his timeline, and the stand he took to achieve his purpose. Moreover, they will achieve this result through carefully observing the information he has personally provided, processing it logically. We not only can know, we will know. We know even today. Think about this for a moment. How many religious spokespeople do you know who speak of Yahweh's personal role in fulfilling and enabling Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah? How many people even know that that is God's work? God enabling his plan to facilitate his covenant. And yet God said that's what he was going to do. And he told us that we would know, that we could use reason and evidence to deduce this timing and his purpose, his plan, and his role in it. And yet, Christians will all shrug it off and say, but no one knows. Then why did God tell us that we would know, that we could know, that we will know, and that we would come to know? By using the gift of the Nesama, of our conscience, our ability to discern that which is true. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. Let me share a little more of what God had to say, and we'll turn to Larry that has a question for us. If you turn to your favorite synagogue, to your local church, to a mosque, or to a classroom expecting to be told the truth, or to your favorite politician, as we discussed this morning, here's God's testimony on this. I did not send these prophets, and so they will be quickly dispatched and driven away. Now, has God quickly dispatched and driven away religious spokespeople, political spokespeople? No. He is speaking of the last days when his work is done, and he will do so. What are we talking about? When is this going to occur then? This is going to occur between his return on Yom Kippurim and on Sukkah. 5 days of which he will quickly dispatch and drive these people away. They will be swiftly pursued. All of them. He says, I did not speak as God to them, and yet they spoke as if they were inspired. But if they had been present in my counsel, and if they had heard, heeded, and proclaimed my word, my family, they would not have returned, and having turned away from their evil and wicked ways, and from their sinful deeds. If ever a man was guilty of this, of claiming to have been inspired by God, claiming even to have been present in the counsel of God, it's Paul. And yet if Paul had actually proclaimed Yah's word, God's family would have returned. They would have turned away from their wicked ways. And instead, they kept marching away from God. We have Larry on the line who has a question. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Yada. Yeah, I've got a question for you, and I understand that there's going to be liars, obviously, right up to the end, because in Zechariah,
yeah,
he's standing there in that five-day period saying, you know, asking him, you know, all these lies you told, you heard, you got a lot of people hurt. What's mm-hmm. the story on that? And they're saying, well, that happened by way of my lover's house and all this nonsense, you know. So
yeah,
the clergy doesn't do real good upon the return. That's clear. But you said that, you know, the storm doesn't have anything to do with Yahweh. And
right.
Of course, I realize that. Matter of fact, it couldn't. But I wonder, during the 7-year tribulation, there appears to be wrath that does have something to do with Yah.
Let's speak about that.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, let's speak about that for a moment. Yeah, you know, on these storms, by the way, it's hard to ignore the idea that Katrina, which was the most devastating, hit probably the most decadent of American cities, the most dependent of American cities. Yeah, the most polygious American city, which would be New Orleans. And on the way, it absolutely devastated the gaining cities of the Mississippi coast, and then you have this storm, and the city that is most devastated is Atlantic City, which is America's second largest gaming mecca, and so it is kind of hard to ignore the irony of all of that. You're speaking about all of the judgments and vials and calamities that occurred during the last 7 years, particularly during the last 300 years, as to whether or not those are the wrath of God in the last 3.5 years prior to his return. Are they mostly the culmination of either human choices or natural calamities that coincide with so many of the devastating things that we have done? And, you know, as I read those, the devastation that befalls humankind, I think the vast majority of it is man bringing it upon himself. I think that when you look at the Magog War and the consequence of it in the first two phases, I think it's humankind that is killing one out of every two people on Earth. The natural disasters could well be a result of the devastating nuclear holocaust we are bringing upon this planet. They could facilitate it, or they could just be that the natural disasters are occurring at this time, and they will be devastating. But much of what is presented is a direct result of man's choices and of us being so militant, so religious, so political, so in league with Satan as opposed to with Yahweh, that I think the majority of us bringing it upon ourselves. Now, for God to say, hey, you know, I'm going to withhold my anger to the last days when I have completed my work, realistically, you could make a very strong case that God actually completes his work with Teruah, the fifth of the called-out assemblies where he harvests those children of the covenant to keep them out of the tribulation, and that on Yom Kippurim, God's work has been done, and at that point it is those who choose to enter his company, to come into the presence of his maternal light and reconcile the relationship, that now he is calling us home. And that, and in this particular case, he's given us the invitation. All we need to do is answer it, so that we can camp out with him, which again is not work on his part. So there is certainly room here in the last 3.5 years for God to display his wrath and not contradict this statement.
Like the asteroid, you know, that they renamed Wormwood, because you get that little nudge, you know.
Yeah, in fact, I got a really interesting email on this morning from an individual who understood the correlation with that asteroid. In fact, this is what he writes, if I may. He says, "I enjoy the program on the Genesis Communication Network via the archives. I'm learning so much about walking with Yahweh since listening to this program. I realized many years ago that I was living in false religion, and I had to leave the Catholic Church. I felt like I was being lied to in a very big way. Now I'm definitely questioning Paul and beginning the journey through the Torah and learning to understand what Yah has for me and my family. I have much to study and absorb, but I can see the big lie has affected even more than my childhood religion. Now I need to come to a full understanding of Yahweh's call, his invitation. I noticed this interesting article about the asteroids that may be significant in your discussion about the future of our planet Earth." And he quotes something from two stories. It says the asteroid Apophis was used as a theoretical test case for the Pease proposal. The 900-foot wide or the 270-meter asteroid is perhaps the most cited as a potential candidate for impacting the Earth sometime in the next few decades. Observations suggest that it could come close to the Earth in 2029. And it is indeed true, and you've mentioned it, that this asteroid called Apophis, which is the an Egyptian transliteration of the name of the Egyptian goddess or god of darkness, death, and destruction, is been named Apophis by scientists sharing the same name of the Egyptian god of darkness and death, is said to come so close to the Earth in 2029, which is the midpoint of the tribulation, that it will be only 10% of the way between us and the moon and well inside of our satellites. And that the thing that causes asteroids to go from near miss to hitting is what happens to them while they're on their elongated orbits before they return. And God is saying of Apophis in Revelation that it's going to be nudged, which means that it will come in contact with another either gravitational entity, or it is going to hit another asteroid, and as a result, that it's going to impact the Earth. And it creates an enormous tsunami that is, in all likelihood, going to inundate Western Europe and the eastern seaboard of the United States. And it does so at a time where God specifically says that this this asteroid is going to impact the Earth. Right on the day that he said it was going to do it is when Apophis will make its approach to Earth. And so it is one of so many affirmations. That
fits the timeline perfectly. I know that.
Right. And here's this asteroid that shares exactly the same name that comes up in Yahweh Kanan's Revelation, and its timing is on the exact day with the exact name coming within within sight of our satellite ring, and God is saying it's going to be nudged. It's going to be balo is the Greek term. It's going to be nudged so that it impacts. And so you read that and you say, all right, that is the future of the earth. At the same time, by the way, there's a mountain of fire that falls into the sea. There's a volcano on an island just off of the Spanish coast that we know is on a fault line. We know that there is a day coming soon that it's going to fall into the sea. That half of that island mountain, the volcanic mountain, is going to fall into the sea. It's going to also create a tsunami that will be in the range of 500 feet as it approaches the American coast and the coast of Western Europe. Going to be absolutely devastating. And these two things are both predicted to occur in the middle of the tribulation. With an Earth that has already exchanged a nuclear holocaust, the second phase of the Magog War, this all-Islamic war that we're seeing materialize throughout the Middle East as Muslims become more fundamentalist, that war deteriorates into not just a war between Islam and Israel, which Yahweh himself intervenes to stop, but a nuclear exchange between the superpowers, and it makes almost a third of the earth uninhabitable, scorching the earth beyond repair. And all of that is in our not so distant future. This is the war begins in 2027. The asteroid and the tsunami are in 2029. The second phase of the Magog War is between 2029 and 2030. That's the world that is awaiting us. It is absolutely devastating.
Real quick here. Got it. Yeah, of course, in Revelation, they changed the name to Wormwood.
Yes.
And also, if you read Revelation, and many people, you know, do, and they don't, you know, they don't go back and read Yahweh's words, they think that the Magog War occurs at the end of the 1,000-year Sukkah because of the way it's worded in English Bibles, which is really...
Yeah, there is a Magog, too, and we'll speak of that when we return to Shattering This. I am Yada. Hello and welcome back to the final segment today of Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yana. Larry brought up the fact that there are two Magog's wars in Scripture. Let's just briefly discuss that. Magog 1 will begin in 2027. The Antichrist is going to replicate Neville Chamberlain's Peace in Our Time. He is going to also replicate Muhammad's Treaty of Hudaybiyah, where the neighbors, the Islamic neighbors of Israel, are going to promise peace to Israel in on a treaty, and then in the immediate aftermath of that treaty, as they make Israel more vulnerable, they're going to attack in unison. This will include virtually every Muslim nation on earth, and that the only way that Israel is spared is that Yahweh himself personally intervenes. Now, that said, I am convinced that that Islam is such a perfect guise for Satan pretending to be God. That's what Allah means, is the God. And that it exists as Allahu Akbar, as Allah existing over Yahweh as being the greatest. That I think that that we're going to see Magog 2, which is the second attack of Islam at the end of the celebration of Sukkah, the 1,000-year millennial celebration of Sukkah, when Satan is released from captivity for a very brief time. And the purpose of that is there will be children born to mortals during this millennial celebration of Sukkah who will need to have their choice to embrace the covenant affirmed, and therefore there will have to be a viable alternative, and that's the reason that Satan is released for a brief period to regale his role as Allah for submission to him. I hope that answers that question, Larry. And Larry, we actually have another Larry. This one is the Larry Squared. He is Larry from Louisiana that would like to add to this conversation. Hello, Larry. Welcome.
Hi. what's your take on the Los Lunas Decalogue stone inscription and the fact that you can find the Tetragrammaton in the Native American names across this nation, and you can still hear them singing Yod Heh Wah Heh in their native tongue today?
Yeah, I've heard and tried to research the stone inscriptions. The difficulty with the inscriptions is that we really haven't found any way to validate the dating of them, and can't even seem to come close on those inscriptions as to when they were made. And so, without an ability to validate the credibility of the inscriptions to a period prior to the time that we have uncovered the original alphabet of Hebrew, which was actually man's first alphabet, really tough to attach any credibility to it. So I can't say, because the more I've studied it, the less credible they appear. As it relates to Yah's name inseminating from our language and native Indian chants, you know, one of the most common camp songs is Kumbaya. And yet there's, you know, to hear Christians sing it, it's Kumbaya, my Lord, and my Lord is Satan. Kum means stand, Ba means in, and Yah is short for Yahweh's name. People citing it haven't got a clue. The Roman Catholic Church, for example, bans the use of Yahweh's name in any one of their churches, and yet I went to a wedding not long ago, and they sang Hallelujah. Hallelujah means to radiate light, so it's to radiate Yahweh's light. They hadn't a clue what they were doing. And yet, you look even at the internet search engine, Yahoo, it's the corruption of Yahweh's name by the Babylonians to torment the Yehudim during their incarceration there. So I'm not surprised that there are many who use Yahweh's name out of context, don't know what it means, and that it permeates aspects of our society. As for the inscriptions, really, really hard to tell. The only inscriptions of Yahweh's name that I would rely on 100% are those that are found in Israel, where we have found inscriptions of Yahweh's name in Paleo-Hebrew that date all the way back to before the time of Dode. So those I would trust. I would also trust those found in the copies in the Dead Sea Scrolls. Larry, we've run to the end of our program today. But on this subject, I'm sure that I did not satisfy your curiosity. I would encourage you, please, call back again at another time, and we can discuss both of these things, and you can make your case for them. Thank you, Larry. And thank you, Larry.
A year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good